Justice should be a lifestyle and not an add-on to business, says Nisi Ekpot in this episode of the Business and Justice series. He emphasizes that because businesses have a long-standing presence in society, they have a greater potential to provide training and upskilling than governments do. Welcome to Reframed. Join us as we explore the concept of redemptive business in our unique context on the African continent.
Hello and welcome to the Zuwani Podcast, which is a platform for business leaders to share insights and personal experience on what it means to engage redemptively in their work. This episode is part of our Business and Justice series, where we're exploring how Christian business leaders are actively working towards a more just society through their businesses. Today, we're talking through sharing knowledge and skills with CEO at BizConnect Africa, Nisi. Nisi, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much, Steve, for having me here today. It's a privilege to be here today.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, turning our attention to the topic at hand, Nisi, which is, of course, sharing knowledge and skills within the context of business and justice, what are your thoughts on the importance of doing this? And what does it look like in the businesses you're involved with?
Thank you very much, Sims. I run a company called BizConnect Africa. And basically what we do in BizConnect Africa is we manage other businesses across a variety of sectors, including property development, trade and investment. We do social enterprise in the area of education and a few other businesses. We work across a couple of cities and a couple of countries, about four or five cities across three countries. We work with, you know, quite a variety of people in terms of permanent workers and temporary workers and workers of other companies that we are invested into. That's what we do in a nutshell. Talking about the contours of the journey, you know, doing business for anybody that does business, if there is a word like that, contours journey in itself, business is
up and down, right?
Yes, it's full of ups and downs and challenges. Unique to some of us was the fact that I started the business as an immigrant, and what that meant was I didn't have the basic things that, you know, the average person has in their country of origin. I didn't have an ID. I didn't have access to capital. I wasn't where I grew up in, so I didn't have networks of people.
Yes.
So it's like starting below ground zero, you know. That was one of the challenges. But over the years, and we've been doing this for over 20 years, there's been, you know, the economy goes up and down. You face the relevant challenges. You expand, and it's a challenge itself in expanding, managing people, you know, all those things that have to do with business challenges. So I could go on and on, but I don't want to end by making the challenge, but to say, but it's also been a very fruitful journey.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, turning our attention to the topic at hand, Nisi, which is, of course, sharing knowledge and skills within the context of business and justice, what are your thoughts on the importance of doing this? And what does it look like in the businesses you're involved with?
You know, that's a very loaded, packed question, and we could go on and on. But in summary, you know, I think that business and justice really has to do with using the tools of the marketplace, the tools of business, to be able to make it possible for people that we encounter to be able to be the maximum that God created them to be in whatever form and whatever way. You know, doing justice doesn't mean everybody becoming a billionaire or everybody becoming a PhD, all that stuff like that. No, it means just everybody being able to gain self-sufficiency, being able to attain what God wanted them to do. And, you know, business is one of the biggest tools, biggest places where you can do this. Politics has its place at government, and everybody talks about government. But, you know, most times politicians are there for a season. Business is lifetime. So you always have an ability to impact communities, impact people, you know, work with people, you know, be able to bring your values in to deal with them at a day-to-day level, to help them, steer them in the right direction, build capacity in them, impact their families and, you know, their sphere of influence.
Yes, I absolutely agree, Nisi. And To be honest, it's something over the years, as I've been talking to church leaders, that we as the church are starting to wake up to more and more, and I'm really excited about that. Now, just talk to me about what that looks like in your business.
Since, you know, for us, sharing knowledge and developing skills is one of our indices for measuring our progress. So we have a set of indices, you know, 5 indices, but broken up into subsections. We call it the True Wealth Index. And so every year or every period of time, maybe not necessarily yearly, we check how far we've gone. So one of the things in there is how much knowledge we've shared, how much of ourselves we've recreated, you know, and we score, just like we score how much profits we've made. It's wired into our DNA, our business. And then, you know, because our business is our passion, is our vision, there is no separation between my business and my life, per se.
Right.
It's what we do every day. We try to make sure that every decision, large or small, goes a long way to share skills, share knowledge, and empower. And, you know, when you see that as a form of wealth, then that you will measure, then you take it more seriously. And the people that work with us try to take it more seriously.
Yeah. Hey, just listening to you, I wonder if there are business people out there who are hearing this and thinking, my goodness, you've actually got an index for this stuff? How on earth do you do that? Is there somewhere that our listeners can go to see how you do this?
Well, we're in the process of doing that right now. It's still an internal thing we've developed for ourselves, you know, and tweaked and tuned over the decade. And trying to, you know, it's one thing, Fitz, to see theories, and it's another thing to practice it. So, yeah. You know, we can say we've begun to practice it and we're getting better at practicing it. At some point, we'll put it out. We've actually been trying to clean it up and work on it. And we've actually put it on the charts for the first time ever. I think for us, what has been important has been to be able to practically defend what we claim. We don't claim it's perfect, but we say we've tried to live according to these principles.
What I like about what you're saying and how you're going about it, Nisi, is that sometimes we can see justice as a bolt-on, right? So I go to work, I run my business, I make money, and then, you know, then I do justice. You know, I think, okay, let me give away some money or whatever justice looks like. But what you're saying is, no, justice is part and parcel of how we do business, right?
That's right. Yeah, that's right. The thing about justice is a lifestyle. You know, if you look at the master, the person that we're trying to copy, he didn't wait for a time to execute justice. It was always done per time, per move. Yeah. So justice is a lifestyle that we do at every second. And you know, when you talk of being a business person, you're not only doing business when you're doing big transactions. You're doing business at every point in time. You're working with people who clean for you, drive for you, taxis who take you to the airport and stuff like that. You begin to execute justice at that level, pay a fair wage, ensure that people gain from transacting with you, that wealth is not created only on one side. It takes time to check. You know, there is one place in the proverb that says a farmer should know the state of his flock. So you take time to know the state of everybody you interact with. I think that is important. And then, of course, there comes a place where you do it at a bigger scale. But it has been a lifestyle then already.
Very good. I like that. Now, it's no secret that one of the challenges South Africa is facing within, it has to be said, a broader global context of ultranationalism is this scourge of xenophobia. Now, as a foreigner who came here with nothing, you in particular would understand the challenges that a lot of our brothers from across the continent are facing here in South Africa. And yet here you are, faithfully empowering South African workers and disadvantaged communities, etc. Is that a challenge for you?
Not so much. You know, see, everything has to be put in context. You know, I work across different countries. Everybody has problems they think are going to kill them. So where we're in South Africa, it's one set of problems. When you're elsewhere, it's another set of problems. You know, everybody, I just read the news. I read news across countries. Everybody's threatening the countries about to tip over and fall off the face of the page. So I look at things in that context. I also try to be a person who is more focused on the positive than the negative. Mm. I always say to people that 33% of the angels went to the devil, 66 went with God. So I should spend the majority of my time on that which is positive. when God gives you a heart for a people or an industry, you then view things differently. You don't view them as a whole. You see the problems and the strengths. So that has been my approach. I was given a heart for the nation. And, you know, from the first day I arrived here, every step of the way, God has used South African people of
good,
every color, black, white, colored, Indian, whatever, to help me grow. You know, so it's, it would be very unfair of me. In fact, I actually defend them to a very large extent, to then take a certain section of community and make their realities the home of everybody. That while being sensitive to the people who have been affected by those things, and also while hoping that and praying that those things can be addressed or, you know, dealt with appropriately.
Yes, yes, very good. Now, I know you're outworking justice in the business context beyond the boundaries of your own business. Just talk to us about some of the things that you're involved with the communities that you're in.
Yeah, okay. So, you know, something I want to make clear is we're a for-profit business. We're actually not an NGO. So we do business to create wealth. But while doing that business to create wealth, we ensure that that wealth is created in such a way that the people we transact with benefit. So we invest in companies that are going to be beneficial to our business. But while doing those investments, so one example is we do property development. Sometimes we work in semi-rural communities. And so we have a policy that says a certain percentage of the people we work with have to be from those communities. And a certain percentage of them have to be people that have been trained from scratch. So it's not just putting icing on the existing cake, but it's about making a new cake. Aha. So we weave these kinds of things into the business. It becomes profitable. I mean, some of those guys, in some way we did a transaction, and some of those guys are now the best builders in the region because we brought the best of skills to train them. So we actually end up benefiting while the guys also benefit from what they do.
Yeah.
These are examples of the kind of footprint we try to do. We try to make sure that when you work in a place, the local people in the place are involved, are engaged in one way or the other. Sometimes it's simple. Sometimes it's very challenging. You know, I know some business people listen to me and say he's talking like he's not been in this kind of places. Don't be mistaken. We've been in places where people came out with guns and machetes and mutti to try to stop us from working. But the end result is that in some of those places, we've worked with hundreds of people from those communities today. So it can work if we have the right frame of mind.
Yeah, I like what you're saying, because we sometimes see justice as a one-way street, you know, all sacrifice where we're giving and giving to underprivileged communities. But what I'm hearing you say is that done right, it actually makes business sense because it's building your business as well, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I don't have anything to add. You've defined it accurately. It's a two-way street. It's a transaction. It's part of business. It's what we're called to do. And yes, you gain from, you know, being a blessing.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you've touched on some of the challenges, and I just want to go there because, you know, we all live in the real world. So any business person listening to this will know that there are real challenges when you're trying to transfer knowledge and skills. And I'm sure you've encountered many of those. Can you just pick a few and share those with us? But more importantly, I'm interested in some of the challenges that you've learned along the way.
Absolutely. We once trained, went into a community to build, and then we gathered a bunch of 70 kids and we trained them from scratch. And the day they qualified, they gathered, they got a leader, they formed a union instantly, and they gave us a minimum wage, a minimum fee they needed to charge. And it was totally unrealistic, and all of them resigned at once.
Wow.
It was like months of work flushed down the drain. So we've had more than enough of challenges with dealing with people. But you see, we've also had successes. We've had people out of this group who actually came back to us and still work with us.
Right.
We've had all our workers leave us and then all come back to us and stuff like that. So time also fixes some of these problems, you know. So it's not all kumbaya, like people say. It has its challenges. Yeah. But the principle always has to do with doing it with the right heart. Not doing it because you just want to score points or compliance, but doing it because you believe that this is how to transform society. Second, we are nation builders. So we throw the seed. Whether or not you work for us, everything we do is deliberate. You can take the knowledge and go elsewhere. Mm-hmm. So that's how we think. Thirdly, we have also realized that communities have historic challenges. So you can't score 100%. You actually should be looking for 10%. But if you can succeed, you know, I like the principle that the retail shops use. They say, I saw one retail shop say 6,000 people walk past every day. But if we can get 5% of them to stop by, we'll be one of the richest shops in town. So you see, that's how the And I thought about it. I said, it's true. I pass by Pick and Pay a lot and I don't go in all the time. So it's the same thing. You know, if we can get the 10% of these people we work with to do well, then most likely in a generation, you would have finished the other one. I'll just tell you one story. You know, my father started a school 40 years ago. It was also a social enterprise. We run the school today. You know, in that community where he started the school, where it was the first place, first school in the community. Today, everybody in that community, the literacy rate in that community is 100%.
Wow.
Because of that school and another school that, or another two schools that came later on. So what I'm saying is, he may have scored 5% attendance 40 years ago, but those 5% grew up and caused their kids to go to school. And 40 years later, you can't find an illiterate person in the community. Same can be applied to business principles.
I like that. And just listening to that, do you think sometimes as business people, we set ourselves up for disappointment and disillusionment by unrealistic expectations?
All the time, most of the time, we start that way. If you're really an entrepreneur, you've been a victim of unrealistic expectations. That comes with running, being an entrepreneur. We start thinking we're going to succeed, and then it doesn't go as fast as we want because we're wired that way. We're in a hurry to make it. We want to make great impact. But sometimes age and time and maturity causes us to begin to stretch our thinking. You know, I think longer term, the sooner we can do that, the better. And the sooner we stop comparing ourselves to other businesses who sometimes are multi-generational businesses, the better. Then it allows us to have the perspective of time. In fact, there's a group I'm a member of that, like a cooperative, and they call it generational group. They actually try to encourage us to always look three generations ahead. You learn to do that and it changes the way you do things. So yes, business partners need to review a lot of what they do, you know, give it time, give it space. You know, some of the greatest projects that things don't have happened because people took a long time to develop those products.
I wonder, in the context of justice through business, if sometimes our disappointment doesn't actually trace back to the fact that perhaps what I was doing was maybe for personal gain or personal recognition, you know, albeit veiled in biblical justice. So, for example, if I embark on some sort of social justice project and I invest time and money, I want to see results. And I also want to talk about it. I want to tell people, right? This is what I did. You know, we went into this community. We helped 10,000 people and so on. But when you only help, say, 5 in a year, that can sometimes be disappointing. And maybe even to the point where you're thinking, I'm not sure if I'm going to do this again next year.
That's right. And you have to bear in mind, Sibs, that some of the campaigns around social justice is actually brought from civil society organizations, NGOs, and things like that. And you're trying to make business aware. It's not, at least in this generation, but I think even in history, it's not native to the business community. The business community actually has a history of exploitation, right?
Right.
In modern times, people are campaigning from the businesses, and businesses are buying into social justice. Now, in the communities of people who brought social justice, the people who invest in them look for numbers, look for large. So you won't get sponsors if you only reached 5 people. Generally tend to form that mindset about those kinds of things.
Yeah. Right.
So now this is where business people should create a shift. we have the financial muscle, the capability, the liberty to choose our objectives that are deliverable.
Good.
So we can say, look, I would be happy if I had have that one person who is the Apostle Paul.
Yeah.
Because then for the next 4,000 years or 10,000 years, he will be relevant.
Right. Yeah.
I gave a story of my dad, and I like stories. He started the school, but what is the story? Somebody else sponsored him. The person sponsored three people in the village, the whole environment community of thousands of people. He just did three. Those three went, excelled, and then came and started something. 40 years down the line, the whole community has been impacted, and we have taken it to the next generation. We have to think strategically. And then I always say to people as businessmen too, the more significant the impact, the fewer people in the room. In business, it's actually different from church. Church likes large numbers. Business, the board takes the biggest decision, and you don't have a board of 200 people. You actually know that the fewer, the easier it is to make impact.
Very true, Nisi. Now, let's end by speaking to people, you know, business people who've had a go, say, at this whole social justice thing, and honestly, working really hard to make it work in their own lives and through their businesses, but perhaps they've come across challenges that have made it seem insurmountable, or maybe those people who've tried it and been burnt or hurt or felt disappointed. What encouragement would you give to people in that situation?
You know, Sibs, like every other thing, we cannot, the Bible says, by our strength, we cannot prevail by our strength. I'm paraphrasing it. By strength, no man shall prevail. We really have to try to, as Christian business people, we really have to try to be empowered by God to do these things, cooperate with God, partner with Him. You know, you, like you say, there is, human beings are full of stuff. We are all full of it. So it's very difficult to even do good for people. Sometimes people don't even believe that. I once did an event, a free business event somewhere, and I got sponsors and my company sponsored part of it. And the people in the community thought that we were fronting for an NGO, an international NGO. So they were accusing us of fronting to gather them together to take pictures to go and sell, because they were saying, why would you do a thing like this? So one of the things is, one, you have to rely on God to do it. Two, you have to be passionate about it. If you're not, don't pretend to be. Go and become passionate, or you get those that are passionate about it to drive it. You just write the check. Deal with it from that perspective. And then number three, just keep trying. If you've been burned, you know, go back and heal and then keep trying, you know. And then, of course, number four, think of the future. Sometimes the things you do today safeguard the safety of your future generations.
Very good, Nisi. Thanks so much for your time and for sharing. I've really been inspired. And just know we're cheering you on and looking forward to having you back on our podcast to see how you're getting on.
We would love to hear your thoughts on this series, so please remember to leave a comment in the rating section after listening to the episode.
Thank you for listening today. If you would like to hear more conversations on the topic of redemptive business in Africa, visit Ziwani's website at www.ziwani.com. That's ZIWANI.com.